Listen to WBGO Newark, 88.3 FM, online at WBGO.org. Good morning. Sheila Anderson here, Salon Sessions. And with me is one of the most talented of the young sets, I should say. I should just say just talented, right? Not bring in age. Drummer, educator, author, health coach. All kinds of things. You are the Renaissance woman of today, I think, known as She Beats. Cherizette Tennon.
Hey.
Did I? You know, I meant to ask you. I always say your name. I don't know if I would say your name right.
It's say it again. Let me see.
Cherizette Tennon?
Yeah, Cherizette.
Cherizette Tennon? Yeah, okay. I meant to ask you before. It's like, am I saying it right? Welcome to Newark, to BGO again.
Thank you. You
will actually be on, you came on with Alan Harris. You're in his Cross That River, which I'm looking forward to seeing on Broadway.
It's going
to
be great.
Yes, yes, yes. I remember when he started doing it. And he started working on that when I started working on my first book.
Oh, really?
They're neighbors. They live up the street from me.
Oh, okay, right.
You know, I go hang out and we, you know, share stuff. But yeah, I love the Harrises. And now, we started off with your CD, a song from your CD, a well-known song, Freedom Jazz Dance, written by Eddie Harris.
Yes.
Talk about this recording and then talk about how and when you decided to be, are you a drummer or a percussionist or both?
I feel as though I'm both. I don't separate.
Or does one, is one the umbrella? Is a percussionist the umbrella?
Right. I feel like percussionist is the umbrella and then everything else is underneath, you know.
Yeah,
my concentration is mostly drum set, but I mean, I'm trained in a lot of different percussion.
Yeah.
So it just depends on what the job asks for.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I see you've been playing the cajon a lot.
Yes.
I've seen you mostly with Alan Harris, right. But you also play elsewhere. Talk about that. You've done so much. I feel like I'm like skipping around, but let's start where you are. And what was your attraction to that instrument? And then of course, when you decided to be a percussionist.
Okay. So my attraction to the cajon started about 9 years ago. I was in my master's program at Northern Illinois University, and this band came through and did a master's program, and lo and behold, I didn't realize that I'd start being a part of that group a year and a half later. It's the Gabriel Alegría Afro-Peruvian Sextet. And so I heard their cajon player, and he was just making it sound, I never heard a box sound like that. And I just was like, how do I figure out this? It feels super African. It feels like there should be a connection to me with it. I couldn't really figure out what it was, but I just knew there was something that attracted me to it. And my school, where I go at Northern Illinois, and at the time, we were the ensemble that were asked to go out to different states and countries to represent the school. So we got invited to go to the Peruvian Jazz Festival that Gabriel curates. And from there, I actually got to take a lesson with Wevito Lobatone, the cajon player in his band. And it was funny because while I was taking a lesson with him, so was Ndugu Chancellor.
Oh, wow.
So it's me and Ndugu in a lesson together with Vito, and Wevito speaks no English at that time. Uh-huh. So we're just like, He's like, no. You know, there's a lot of grunting going on. And I was amazed and in awe because not only am I studying with Wevito and learning cool rhythms, but I'm also in the same room with the guy that just laid it in the pocket on Thriller, you know? And so my world just got turned upside down. And from there, I brought home a cajon, started studying it, practicing it. And I did something that all of my teachers told me to do once I graduated, stay in contact with my network. And so I emailed Gabriel and I was like, hi, I've graduated, you know, along with other people. And while I was teaching at Columbia College, he emailed me and he said, hey, there might actually be an opportunity for you to audition for the band because there's this jazz club opening up called Tutuma Social Club, and it's going to be in Midtown Manhattan. And I'm thinking, yeah, right, okay, this is way too good to be true. But no, it happened. And so he said, I'm going to send you all this music, send you all these rhythms, listen to a lot of Peru and Negro, a lot of different cajon players, study the rhythms and study the drum key, because in Hugo Alcazar is his drummer, and he had written out this drum key into the patterns that would match the cajon rhythms, and then he just wrote them to fit on drum set placement. So I had to study where those go, and basically I didn't touch the drum set for about 6 months because I just basically had to play cajon for a while.
Wow.
Because I would also take the role of the cajon player when Huevito would dance. So when Huevito would dance or play any other percussion instrument, you know, I'd probably have to play either drum set and switch to cajon or just play cajon in certain parts. So it was a learning experience, but from there is where my love of cajon came from. And all of a sudden, I found myself playing with other people with just cajon, like singer-songwriters that didn't want a full kit. So I had this idea of, oh, okay, maybe I can do a hybrid kit. And so I'd bring my hi-hat with a cajon, with a snare drum, and, you know, one cymbal, or just one cymbal and a cajon on the gig, and it actually worked out. You know, I started doing it more, and so now it's kind of become part of my niche.
Do you play cajon with sticks as well, or just your hands?
I feel like that's cheating, honestly.
Oh, is it?
I personally feel like it is because of learning the school of where it came from. Because the Peruvian cajon is completely different from the Spanish cajon.
Oh.
Yeah, because a lot of people don't realize that during the whole slave trade, you know, the slaves that got colonized in Peru, they were allowed certain liberties that the Westerner slave trades didn't allow, you know, slaves that came into America. So they were still connected to a lot of the pure rhythms, and they were allowed to not only play their rhythms on the ships, but they would flip over these little crates and drawers, and that's how the cajon was developed outside of the African origin. But when Spain came in and conquered Peru, they were trying to figure out how to get the sound that, you know, all of the African players were getting. And they couldn't do it, so they put snares on the inside and took it back to Spain, and that's how I became the flamenco cajon. So that's why so when you hear a lot of the wetness, you know, that's too wet, it's probably got snares in it, because the
what do you mean it has snares in it? Like, when I think of a snare, when I think of the snare drum,
yeah, it's exactly.
So they actually put it in...
Inside the head. It's laying up against the plywood, you know.
Oh.
But the Peruvian cajon doesn't have that. And that was very tricky for me at first when I started playing it, because there was no sustain when you play a dry instrument. You know, I'm used to playing cymbals, and I'm used to all my drums sustaining. So it messed with my time for a little bit, because I would feel the duration, the beat in between from when I would play cymbals or snare. But when you're playing Peruvian music, it's a lot drier. They don't want it to be wet. They don't want a lot of sustain. So I had to figure out how to reorchestrate the way I played. And cajon taught me a lot of that, because the Peruvian cajon is super duper dry.
Okay. Now this is definitely new to me. Dry and wet.
Yep, dry and wet. Yep.
When it comes to the drums. Wow. Fascinating. Well, I can't wait to hear, because you're obviously using the cajon with Alan and Cross That River.
Yes.
Seen that. And you're working on a new project.
Yes.
Are you going to feature a lot of that as well?
I am, but this project for me is a little bit, not tricky, but okay, you know how when you have an idea and you want your idea to stand out from everybody else's, and you want it to fit but not really fit, you know, you want it to be appreciated, but you don't want it to sound like somebody else.
You want to be an individual.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. So my new project is called Sonic Wallpaper, and basically it takes the Afro-Peruvian rhythms that I've been influenced by, along with this African artist that I played with quite often. She's on my first album. So I got the opportunity to go to Angola and bring back a lot of the Uduru rhythms. And the Uduru rhythms are like the rhythms that are like, and it sounds very similar to the, it doesn't swing as much. And it's really tricky because the Peruvian rhythms, they don't really swing, but they feel like they swing. They swing in a different way from jazz swing. You know, they accent the second part of what we would call the triplet. And it just creates this whole other universe where there's like a push and then a pull, push, then a pull. And so it makes the time feel as though it's rushing, but it's not. It's just like you're hitting the accent of one beat so heavy that it makes it feel like it actually stops and starts again. And so I'm trying to incorporate that against all of the hip hop and the R&B that I listened to with my parents from like the 70s, the 80s on into the 90s when I was into Janet Jackson and all the stuff produced by Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis. And so that whole blend, and I don't really want it to swing. I don't want it to be straight ahead at all because I already have my straight ahead project. So out of this is called Sonic Wallpaper. And I have lyrics that I've written that I have different vocalists sing. I can sing, but I feel as though I sing better when I'm on a drum kit. And why not have somebody else that's gift is to actually sing, you know, and just I'll write the music and we'll develop it from there. So Sonic Wallpaper is this new baby and I'm really excited about it. You know, I don't know how, if I can, I don't know if I'm going to have anything that can be marketed, you know, as straight ahead, but I don't think it'll matter.
It's yeah. Just, it's music.
Exactly.
It's music heavily influenced by jazz.
Yeah.
And, you were influenced or are or still by Art Blakey.
Yes.
And you have brought, well, you have chosen to for us to hear Art Blakey and Thelonious Monk. And what is it that you gravitate to
so
with them?
With them, I like, oh, man, Art Blakey alone is just, he's just fire, you know. Just the energy is constantly there. And then I feel as though I have a connection with the way Thelonious approaches melody, you know, and way things are rhythmically broken up sometimes and phrasing. You know, I don't like, especially in my group, I don't like to play one all the time because I think in all other bands that I support as a sideman, you know, my role and duty is usually to play one or to put accents where they want it to be. So in my group, I try to be completely opposite and give those responsibilities to other people in my band so I can be free. Like if I just want to get up and talk to the people, they can keep playing, you know, because another thing that you also find in the rhythm section is the drummer is constantly usually playing,
right.
You know, so I try to take a different approach. And I feel as though Thelonious and Art Blakey kind of complement each other in that way. And like if Art Blakey wanted to stop playing at any moment, it could be cool, you know. And then Thelonious, just the way the melodies, the little nuances, the colors, it just kind of reminds me of how abstract I like to be sometimes, but it could be misunderstood.
How difficult, when you moved here, how difficult was it for you to, what were the obstacles? I mean, getting into the jazz world, or I mean, what was it like for you to move to the big city and, you know?
Okay, so that's a deep question because, I mean, so there were a few different obstacles. The first obstacle was finding balance because I'm working at this jazz club, you know, specifically for jazz, Afro-Peruvian jazz music. And I mean, it's an okay gig, but you know, it's still like I need to do something 9 to 5 to balance it off a little bit and just until I get to meet other jazz musicians. So I started working at New York Sports Club, 59th and Park, because before I moved from Chicago, I was studying to get my certification in personal training.
Oh.
Yeah. And so I finished my certification while I was starting the job at New York Sports Club while working at the club every night. And it was really hard balance-wise because I would have clients sometimes at 5:30 or 6 a.m. and I wouldn't get done with the gig until about 11 or 11:30 p.m. And I had to go from Midtown to Brooklyn to stay with my cousins. So I wouldn't get home until about 1 or 2, every night, and then basically get back up and do it again.
Wow.
Yeah, so that was one obstacle. But do you want any more obstacles or
Well, getting into connecting with in the jazz community, and because I met you through Tia Fuller, I think,
Yes.
ages ago,
Right.
many moons ago.
So I believe it Tia's Christmas party to be exact. Yeah,
Yeah.
yeah.
Yes.
So believe it or not, my connection to Tia and to New York happened way before I knew I was going to be in New York. And that happened when I was about, well, if you let Mimi Jones tell it,
Okay.
I was 14 years old. And I was just playing around North Carolina. I had just graduated from Appalachian for my undergrad. And she was coming down for tour with somebody. I can't remember who she was with. And I didn't see Mimi until my master's program, and I won Sisters in Jazz, the IAJE, when IAJE was still around. So it was the final year that IAJE existed, and I won the award to go play with all these other top female jazz musicians in their program. And so I was at the Millennium Stage in DC at the Kennedy Center, and I looked at Miriam. She looked at me. She was like, "Wait, don't I know you?" I was like, I think so, but I can't. She's like, North Carolina. I was like, yeah. And so she was like, okay, well, if you ever come to New York, let me know. I said, all right, cool, I'll let you know. And that was before I knew about the whole Peruvian gig. And then when I got it, I remembered. So I called her, and I actually was trying to see if I could stay with either her or Pauline Jean before I got here, but it didn't work out. And it actually worked out for the better, you know. But anyway, I called her, and it took maybe like another year for us to connect. But then she kept her word, and she kept introducing me to people. And something happened where Tia needed a drummer for a gig, and I started playing with Tia. And then all of a sudden, a year and a half after living in New York, I went on tour with Tia for like half the year, and it was super intense, super fun, because I really didn't come from the school of bebop. I came from the school of straight ahead. So when I first started playing with Tia, it was very different. And so I had to start listening to other stuff and figuring out, I was like, oh, this is where she's coming from. This is the aspect where she's coming from. And, it requires a completely different energy than what I was used to. And then from there, I met so many other artists like Rachel Eckroft. And then Mimi is actually the one who influenced me to start my band again, because after North Carolina, I didn't really think I wanted to have my own group because it was just a lot of work. It's like, no, I think I'm good with being a side man. She was like, I don't know if you really are supposed to just be a side man. And so then the whole Hot Tone thing happened, and
Okay.
it's
Hot Tone is her label.
exactly.
Yeah. Nice. It's amazing. And you've been here in New York how long?
It'll be, let's see, 8 years.
Wow.
8 years.
Wow. It seems like you've been here forever. It feels like it does sometimes, right?
Right.
Talk about your you have a very, I think, stringent but great regimen when you wake up. I'll talk about that. 'Cause I was looking, I was like, I need to construct my day the same way. What is, because the reason why I'm asking is because it includes working out and and that talk about how important it is for us to be healthy. I mean, years ago a guy did a show, Drum Talk, and he was saying he was a drummer, and he had someone on who I think he did something in the health industry, whatever. But he said, drummers need to, we need to stay in shape. And I hadn't really thought
Yeah.
about it like that. But, talk about your regimen.
Okay. So, My regimen is super important just because, for one, being a drummer, it's not really the drums that's the issue. It's not playing the drums is the problem. It's the equipment, you know. So carrying my cymbal bag, even with the lightest cymbals that I have, you're still looking at maybe about 40 to 50 pounds of weight, you know. And I used to have a cymbal bag that I put on my back. But I learned a few years ago, actually like 8 years ago, when I started playing cajon, I got injured because my technique wasn't great, because I wasn't bending from my hinge when I played the cajon. I was kind of bending from my shoulders and humping over my back. So I was putting an unnecessary curve in my lumbar. And from that, I experienced the first time sciatic nerve issue. And it caused a severe problem that made me have to rethink how I use my body when I'm playing cajon and playing drum kit. And so the wear and tear of being a drummer actually starts as soon as you start playing the instrument, especially if you're in marching ensembles. So I come from a marching regimen where I place a harness on my shoulders. And all of that, you know, started compressing the nerve endings in my L4 and L5. So after all of that wear and tear over the years, you know, I've been playing since middle school, started to catch up with me, as well as being an athlete. So, you know, the aspect of playing basketball and being a drummer, you know, year round. And I started playing basketball when I was 9. So I started lifting weights when I was in a junior in high school. I'm squatting, you know, like 300 pounds, putting about 2 to 4 plates on my back. I'm power cleaning. You know what a power clean is?
No.
So when you power clean, you pull the weight from the floor like a dead weight. You snatch it up and then you throw it over your head. And I was basically doing 135 of that, you know. And I won a weightlifting award, but all of those things started to catch up with me. So I had to switch how I trained. And I realized that I was putting my body in one plane of motion, basically playing with my frontal part of my body all the time. And so, you know, you're playing God knows how many reps on one song in one position the whole time. You may have ballistic movement. That's what we call it in the training world, ballistic movement versus like functional movement. And so over time, your muscles, if you're not balancing them, and what I mean by balance is you have stabilizer muscles, which are usually the smaller groups, and they start to give out first. And so who takes over? The larger group muscles. But then after a while, if the larger group muscles don't have the support of the smaller group, they both give out. Mm-hmm. And that's how injuries happen. Mm-hmm. So now in my workouts, I get up in the morning, the first thing I have to do is stretch, because if not, just from sitting on the drum throne for at least an hour, you know, your hips get tight. And so me and my doctors discovered that my gluteus medius, the smaller part of the glute of the maximus, wasn't activating, which means it wasn't awoke. It was not doing all the work that it should be doing. So it's putting more of the weight on my larger glutes, because, you know, you're sitting. And then my top of my legs and the back of my legs weren't as activated as they should be, because they were basically making my larger glutes do all the work. So when I'm not playing drums, I actually do exercises that wake up my entire body, my small group and my large groups. And I stopped lifting heavy. I do a lot of higher reps now. And one of the most important things I had to learn is I have to drink a lot of water, you know. So stay hydrated, stretching, yeah. High reps.
Okay. Afro-Peruvian classics, The Soul of Black Peru. We're going to hear
Toro Mata
from Lucila Campos, mm-hmm, on WBGO Newark, 883 FM, WBGO.org. Question. I asked you the question, but I didn't give you a chance to answer.
Okay.
Why did you... You knew at a very young age you wanted to be a drummer.
Yes.
What was it about the drums, and what was it... What made you think you could actually do this?
So I always knew at a young age because my parents were musicians. My mom played trombone, and my father was a vocalist. And so there was always music in the house, and, you know, the excitement for me was when my mom would play the records and the 8-tracks. We still got records and 8-track players at our house,
wow,
by the way, right now. And then, you know, later on when BMI came out, BMI Music Group, and you could buy those CDs for 10 cents,
mm-hmm,
she would get me all different types of CDs, and I would grow up listening to Tyrone Davis in the house and so many different artists that... It just felt right. And then she introduced me to all these big band CDs through BMI. And I really liked the drummers on it. But I knew at 4 I wanted to play because around that time is when MTV came out.
Okay.
And Sheila E.
Yeah.
Was on one of the music awards.
Yeah.
And I remember it clearly, her playing The Glamorous Life. And she threw up her sticks and the lights went out and they glow in the dark. And then she spun around and caught them. And I remember saying, that's what I want to do. And and it came full circle for me a couple of weeks ago when I got to meet her at the Jazz House Kids,
uh-huh,
Foundation, you know, fundraiser.
Yes. So, yes. Oh, that's exciting. I still have my Sheila E. t-shirt from this, from the tour.
Oh,
from the, in
wow.
80.
Yeah. Oh, that's nice.
Turquoise. I wanted to sign it, but I never seemed to have it when... You know, she's going to be around, but it's, you know.
Yeah, I have a record
a shirt
with her on the front of it.
Yeah. You know, I was at a diner recently, and some brother sat next to me, and they said something, and I said, I'm Sheila E. And they're like, what? Well, my middle name's Elaine.
Right.
I'm just saying, I'm not lying.
No, you're not.
What? It's like, yeah. Anyway. So what kind of music do you listen to these days in addition to, you said you've been listening to a lot of Blakey, but you've been listening to a lot of other music.
I've been listening to a lot of stuff. I actually made a list so I wouldn't forget, but I'll just try to be brief with it. That list includes Nona Hendrix.
Who we're going to hear.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, but in the mornings, I have to wake up, you know, and be grateful. So I listen to Ty Tribbett, I Made It Through, you know, because that wakes me up. But my alarm clock is actually set to Janet Jackson, Black Eagle.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So that wakes me up. And then I listen to Ty Tribbett or Ricky Dillard. And then if I'm feeling kind of sluggish, I'll turn on some Meghan Trainor. Where the song Me Too, you know, you heard that song Me Too? Oh, she was like, if I were you, I would want to be Me
I
Too.
I may have.
Yeah, you should check that out.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. And my inspiration comes from, we already listened to Art Blakey. Lately, my inspiration has been with him. I've been listening to a lot of Sergio Mendez, the Timeless album, and anything from Peru Negro. And for new sound approaches, especially for what I'm doing with Sonic Wallpaper, I have found myself engulfed in SZA, Rihanna, Solange, this artist named S.G. Lewis, and believe it or not, Crime Mob, because, you know, I am from the South, so I got to listen to my dirty, dirty South.
Of course.
You know, I got to get ratchet a little bit. And then, you know, if I'm in an African mode, I'll listen to some KC his album called The Takeover. And if I'm really stressed out while I'm driving, which is a lot because I have to bring my cymbal bag and stuff,
mm-hmm,
for gigs, I have to put in DJ Tony Touch. He made me this house CD of all these different house compilations he did. So I put that on. That keeps me relaxed so I won't, you know, kill nobody.
Yeah. Oh, please. I'm on the road all the time. And it's, drivers are getting worse.
Yeah, they are.
You know, so I decided I'm not a speed demon any longer, and I relax. I let people cut me off. I don't care. It's like, keep on going. You'll get the ticket on me. Been there, done that. So we're going to listen to Nona Hendrix and Bill Vera and the song I Can't Stand It. What is it about Nona that just, I mean, I love Nona. What is it about Nona that does it for you?
There's a lot of things about Nona that, for one, just her vibrance and her energy on stage, the presence that she has, mm-hmm. and the way that she just, she's really sweet, but she's still able to control the band and control what she wants to happen. Mm-hmm. And I recently got to play with her, and on stage, I couldn't see her where I was because the stage was so tiny, but everybody like opened up the floodgates for me, and she's looking at me. And then she's like testing me on stage. And I got this drum lesson from Nona Hendrix on stage. And she was like, come on now. And she's killing me. And I'm like, I don't know what this lady wants from me, but okay. Yeah. And it was amazing. And afterwards, I was like, thank you for my drum lesson. She said, you're a very good student. You catch on quick.
Oh, yeah. Wow. That's great. I can't stand it. You've been a wonderful guest. Shirazetten, and you are such a talent, and I'm so glad to know you and get to hear you all these years and watch you develop and hire you for things. So what do you have going, what's going on with you in the next few minutes? Let us know what is happening, how to find you, follow you, etc., and then talk about the song we're going to hear from Sergio Mendez.
All right. So for all you social media people, you can find me on my IG at Shirazette She Beats Tenon. If you like the Twitter tweet, you can find me at Tenon L. And my website is www.shirazettenon.com. I think that sizes it up for connection. As far as what I'm doing, currently I'm in rehearsals for Alan Harris's Cross That River, which is super exciting because he gave me a big responsibility.
Oh, what was that?
He made me the musical director.
No.
Yeah.
All right. All right. I love that. Congratulations.
Yeah. Oh,
that is a responsibility. Well, I've certainly learned a lot, and I'm blown away by your knowledge, but I'm telling you, your talent.
Shirazette
Tenon, thank you for coming out to Newark
in
a week. I'm Sheila Anderson, and this is Salon Sessions. Stick around because Weekend Jazz After Hours continues. Don't go anywhere.